Day of October. We are into the fall 2019, if you can believe it. I believe this is our last official scheduled meeting for the year, as it looks. And much to talk about. A lot going on. I'm Dr. Stephen Holt, and I facilitate this wonderful bond oversight committee. We are going to get rolling here and go through our agenda. Some of the normal disclaimer communication I give about it being a public meeting, or not being a public meeting, but a meeting that's open to the public, I won't go through it all because those of us who are here know the kind of spiel and how we do what we do. If you have not grabbed an agenda and you want one, please do so. And we will do roll call and then get going.
Let me start.
Please.
Annalisa Kriller, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Susan Emmons, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Todd Struble, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Tanya Wolfersberger, PHB.
Molly Rogers, Housing Bureau.
Excellent, excellent. I'm going to ask you to take a moment and look over the meeting summary from our last meeting. If you haven't had a chance to do so, we'll give you a chance to do that. Take a couple minutes. And then ask for one of the Bond Oversight Committee members to make a motion about the meeting summary.
Well, I reviewed it, and I think it looks fine, and I make a motion to accept it.
I'll second it.
Excellent. Moved and seconded. All in favor, simply say aye.
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 Excellent. All right. We are on to our Portland housing bond update.
I'm going to start off with a little bit of an overview of our expenditure report. I'm going to ask Elizabeth Hilt to just sit at the table with us in case you guys have questions. Elizabeth works on the finance team. And knows a lot of the details, but I'll go through the highlights and the summary here of where we are in terms of bond spending. So we're about 2.5 years in when the bond went into effect. We have had two bond issuances, one in 2017, the other one in 2019. The one in 2017 really represents the acquisition of the Ellington apartments. And when we look at all the various costs that it went, that we had to incur to purchase the building and do due diligence, and also incur costs to just issue the bonds themselves, what these numbers represent is the full all-in costs to the city to purchase these three buildings. So the Ellington represents our largest expenditure at roughly $37.5 million. Subsequently, we issued bonds to purchase two other buildings, one in East Burnside called 105th and Burnside. And additionally, we bought a single-family home in Prescott that we are putting in, that we just recently put into our bond opportunity solicitation to be redeveloped. So as of right now, all in total, maybe Elizabeth can help me out. How much have we spent in total in bonds right now? Do you add each of these up here?
Yes. $52,576,000.
So $52 million, which means we have roughly about $200 million left for the bond, for the rest of the bond. So, and we're hoping to have an update for you and each time we have a meeting around where we are in terms of the expenditures. And then what Tawny's going to cover, of course, is all the new commitments that we have made to spend another set of several millions for new projects. Anyone have any questions?
No, we'll keep
going. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, I guess I have a question. Like, how will we know when...
Mike.
Oh, sorry. As the new projects need disbursements from bonds, I don't know what the term is, but when we will get updates, I'm assuming, as those things happen in just the regular course of these meetings.
Yes, we work very closely with the city's debt manager and Office of Management and Finance to line up when the bond issuance will occur with when we actually need to put the money into the project before they can close. So we will give you updates exactly on what has been dispersed and expended, and then of course, what will be is projected to be spent as part of these reports.
Okay, so we just want to go over again our awarded projects from our bond opportunity solicitation. I know many of you have seen the press releases or joined us at city council chambers for our presentation and announcement there. But just for the benefit of being nice in this setting to go over the projects again, and just to remind folks that of this bond opportunity solicitation, it was totaling, we received 21 proposals from 21 different projects, and a total request of about $218 million overall. Our opportunity solicitation released $70 million from the get-go. We ended up going over that a little bit, as you'll see. So I just wanted to go over each project a little bit as a nice review of our 9 awarded projects. Cathedral Village is one of them in North Portland. This is one of our priority locations that we put out in the BOSS of North Portland. So we're really excited to see this one come to fruition in the St. John's neighborhood. It's gonna, sponsors are Catholic Charities of Oregon and Related Northwest. Catholic Charities is going to be providing the PSH services and the resident services, and they also are pursuing a partnership with Bravo, which is an arts and music after school program for youth that will be residing there. And I think what's particularly exciting about this project is it's 110 units in St. John's, over half are family size units. The next we have is the Alta 18th in the Alphabet District of Northwest Portland. So that in itself is fairly exciting. It's a large project, 144 units, all and with 48 PSH units that will be provided, with a population focus on seniors, veterans, and disabled households. Service partnerships will be with Northwest Pilot Project and the Native American Youth and Family Center. Next up is the Joyce Hotel, which will be rehabbed. We offered the choice to folks to submit proposals for either a rehab or a rebuild of a new building here. So we're excited that this is going to turn out to be a rehab through Community Partners for Affordable Housing. They are going to preserve 66 of the SRO style units in this building. They will be all PSH. And service providers will be Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, Native American Rehabilitation Association, and Cascade AIDS Project. They're doing a collaborative service provider model, which will be interesting and new. Then we have the West Wind, one of our other projects that we offered through the solicitation. This is exciting in a different way because it will be rebuilding the existing building, taking that down and replacing it with a brand new building, adding 30 more units that are currently offered there for a total of 100 units, 70 of which will be for PSH households. The service partnership will be through Native American Rehabilitation Association, or NARA. And Central City's programs that they provide in-house, which are culturally responsive as well. Yes, Susan.
Is there a timeline on each one of these? I mean, I know that's a tricky question, but at some point, is there like a predicting out there, like, yeah, when are they going to open?
Part of their proposals, we asked as a project schedule, but that's just kind of a broad brush.
Right.
I think what Jill will provide more information is kind of like how we get more detailed and firm on what that schedule is going to look like.
Hi, Susan. In the project proposals that we asked the proposers to provide, we actually asked them for a complete project schedule, which includes when do they expect to have financial close, and from financial close, when do they expect to have completion of construction, and then the final is when do they expect to have it completely leased up. So using that methodology, and there's a number of other milestones in there, but using that methodology, we can sort of lay out when is the bond funds expected to sort of be dispersed. And as we reach financial close, the underwriters, the team here, will actually ask each of the team for a complete construction schedule. Yeah, and the typical timeline from sort of award to financial close, it's generally about 12 months. This includes the period that will be for what we call due diligence. As noted in the memos before, many of our sponsors have not started the due diligence or completed the due diligence, meaning they do not have the geotech, they do not have the environmental, they do not have also the permitting, meaning the design and schematics or anything like that in terms of detailed drawings. And they also haven't started the process with the different bureaus, including Bureau of Development Services or BES or PBOT to figure out easements, rights of way, and all that. So that process does take time. That's why there's pre-development of 12 months. Construction period is usually between 12 to maybe 20 months. 12 months is sort of the smaller, more standard projects, maybe a four-story. The larger, more complex projects take up, you know, 18, 20 months.
Just to add to that, all of the projects except one was able to secure enough public financing that they can go and apply to the state for non-competitive 4% tax credits, in addition to working with different lenders of what type of debt product they will use on the project. So we designed this solicitation to be able to move projects, we're hoping, more quickly than they would otherwise, where they would have to leverage other additional competitive public funds. One project did propose to do that, and we are anticipating they will have to do that, which means that their timeline would be longer to do in order to meet up other timelines. And that's the, well, get in front of Tanya's thunder, but it's the but that's the Las Adelitas project with Hacienda.
And I should also mention, I don't know, I'm sorry if I'm stealing your thunder again. There are a couple of projects that are on PHB-owned sites, and one of them on PHB-owned site, Westwind, will require the relocation of existing residents. So that may take a little time.
Right.
And another project has the demolition. So these projects may be a little bit more non-immediate, but it's not going to be pushed out that far. Or we hope it's not going to be pushed out that far.
Okay, I have a question about the Housing Bureau's right to return policy. I guess now that we have prominent projects selected for North and Northeast Portland, I'm sort of like broadly familiar with the right to return policy, but I don't know the details of like how it will interact with these bond projects. Is it kind of just like any PHB project will include that policy, and how will the word be, like how will folks know about their ability to, you know, get that preference or how they're attached to these projects?
If I could just interject, Todd, the program is actually called the preference policy.
Preference policy, yeah, right? Preference. Return preference policy.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have just the right person here to help us. So thank you to help me out a little bit. It's called the North Northeast Preference Policy, and it really is in support of the North Northeast Oversight Committee that that the city and Dr. Holt actually chairs that
yes.
committee. And it really is a way for to help folks who've been displaced through city action, a series of city actions over the course of several decades, to be able to get a preference back into a housing opportunity. And we're doing both homeownership and rental opportunities with the preference policy. And so there's been an incredible amount of outreach already. We've already had 2 to 3 projects leased up. Three projects?
Two projects leased up, 4 in the middle of construction, which is going to be coming up in end of this year, and then 3 of those, these are the 4 rentals, and then 3 others in the middle of 2020, sometime in 2020. Out of the home ownership, 1 is up for, essentially, we have 3 projects in home ownership. 1 is available, all 3 are available for home buyers, low-income home buyers. 1 is probably going to be ready early 2020 to move in. Another one towards the end of 2020, and the last one sometime in 2021.
So each of these have had an ability, a whole marketing and outreach effort, and to be able to have to be made aware of the opportunity, and then of course what we do is depending on how many times you were affected by city action, there's a numerical formula that goes into it. Every one of these lease ups we've done, we've had hundreds of applicants. Vast majority of them have been eligible for the preference policy, like over 95%. The way we wrote the bond opportunity solicitation was if a project that's located in that north northeast urban renewal area comes in, they would apply the same north northeast mm-hmm. preference policy. I don't believe any one project came in.
Oh, that's in. Oh, I see.
It's just in the north northeast urban renewal interstate URA. Yeah.
Okay. Right, and we did not have any. None of the 9 awarded projects are within that urban renewal area, so.
Preference policy will not.
So they don't have to follow that preference policy.
They do not have to, or they will not.
They will not,
they will
and they
not.
Do not have to. Okay. Moving right along, Anna Mann House. This is a combination of new construction and rehab of a historically significant building in the Laurelhurst neighborhood, which is a high opportunity neighborhood, and we're excited for this opportunity to see this building come into fruition, bringing in 88 total units, 43 of which are family sized. The service partnerships will be with Lukedorf Inc. and the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization. The sponsor is Innovative Housing Incorporated. Go back and say that. Lukedorf will be providing on-site and off-site clinical services, and then IRCO will be providing marketing and outreach referrals, as well as some additional programming.
I'm just going to add, this proposal came along with a letter from the Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association in support of the project, which was in the oversight committee. I mean, the community review committee was particularly pleased to see.
Good work.
Yes. A lovely, surprising element. The next one is the third of our PHB-owned properties that we included in the solicitation, which is at Northeast Prescott in the Cully neighborhood. This will be developed by Community Development Partners and the Native American Youth and Family Center, or NAYA. And so we're excited about this co-sponsorship, particularly with a culturally specific organization like NAYA. And it's in this project is located in the Cully neighborhood, which is an area that has experienced a high rate of displacement and gentrification and not a lot of opportunities for affordable housing. So we're excited to get this one off the ground. The service partnership for PSH will be through the Native American Rehabilitation Association. You've heard me say them several times, so they're going to be really busy. And then we have Las Adelitas, which Molly mentioned. sponsored by Hacienda CDC. For those of you who may know or driven past, this is in the site of the former Sugar Shack, which has been a high priority for redevelopment for the entire Coley neighborhood, and particularly the Living Coley Collaborative. So I think everyone is thrilled to see this parcel of land be redeveloped in 141 units of housing, with lots of family units, lots of services and programs that will be provided. A PSH service partner will be Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, and I can't remember the other thing Molly mentioned, but that's about it. So then we have 115th and Division Street, brought to us by Related Northwest and Central City Concern. It is in one of our priority locations, which was East Portland, east of I-205. It's essentially adjacent to another property that we funded through our summer NOFA, called Division Street Apartments. They'll be able to leverage kind of their programming and operations between the two sites. This one will bring in a significant number of family-sized units services provided through Central City Concerns programs. They did not ask for any vouchers, which was also intriguing and appealing as well. And then lastly, we have our Stark Street project, another East Portland project from Human Solutions. Again, large project, large number of family-sized units. It contributes, it's part of the Rosewood Initiative neighborhood, so contributing to all of their strategies and priorities out in that district. And service providers will be IRCO and LifeWorks Northwest. So that is all of them. They all 12 projects, the 9 awarded projects through this FOSS and our 3 existing projects. You can see up there on the board for 12 total. I think what this represents is 12 projects that will be housing nearly 3,000 people in total. And through this FOSS for the 9 awarded projects, the fact that we like to count is the amount of leverage that we were able to bring in, which was over $200 million in leverage through this FOSS. So all exciting, and that's, you know, thanks to our ability after the constitutional amendment changed to bring in private partnerships.
I just want to extend a huge amount of gratitude and thank you to our Oversight Committee members who served as part of our review process and review committee. It was an incredible process to have to digest an incredible amount of information in a short amount of time, and to be able to have a really level of questions for the different proposers that really spanned from their service partnerships, their equity plan, their proposed team, and in a way that it was really engaging and got right to the point. And it is an incredible amount of time and commitment people have to spend to do that, but it provides a huge service for us to really understand the value of each of these projects. So just want to extend a thank you for you guys who were a part of that whole process.
So you said in the beginning that you received 21 proposals requesting $218 million, and so you funded 9, mm-hmm. And what was the total of what you funded?
Look up in our sheet and our handouts that I think the 9 funded projects total over $121.5 million in PHP funds, bond funds.
Okay. Susan, it's in the attached memo here. Okay. Delineates all of the units, and then the
we've got these nice little tables.
And then the spending. There is though. Those are the total on PHP. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Dr. Holt.
Thank you.
Good morning. Those are the total amounts that we're spending on the projects. There is an additional capital that's coming in, both from the sale of Wapato as well as some funds for the Joyce. So the total amount from the bonds is actually $115 million. So there's about $6.4 million that we're bringing in an additional fund. So it's $115.
I'm sorry, can you clarify that? How does the sale of the Wapato sale interface with the bond?
So when we, Wapato, the county, Multnomah County, when they sold Wapato, they set aside a certain amount of the proceeds for affordable housing, in particular supportive housing. And so for capital, it's a one-time capital infusion. And Multnomah County will be providing $4 million in funds for the West Wind. So we had discussions with them, oh goodness, more than a year ago when they initially sold Wapato. And so it's part of the capital stack we'll be using for the replacement of the West Wind. And that was very kind and generous of them to contribute to that project.
And then in turn, that just saves the use of bond proceeds.
Yep.
Okay.
It stretches our dollars farther.
So given your explanation about the typical timeline of pre-development 12 months, construction 12 to 20 months, so we could, it'll be staggered clearly depending on the project, but we could see a finished product at by the end of the year 2021? Would that make sense given what you just said?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're hopeful.
Wow.
Yes.
And then they'll just...
And they'll be having residents move in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so it's just worth celebrating over and over and over. Met our bond goals. Round of applause around the table. I've become very fond of these really big green check marks. Showing where not only have we met, but in three areas exceeded the goals, the production goals in our bond policy framework. I also, you know, looking at the map gives us a great visual of how we'll be able to kind of spread resources across the city. It also gives us an indication of where we need to go next, moving forward with our remaining bond dollars as well. But I also just wanted to point out that, you know, the production goals are great. Those are really, like, definitive. But we're also able to meet some of our other priorities within the bond policy framework through the solicitation as well. You know, not only the geographic disbursement, but, you know, we had 7 of those, or 77% of the projects are in high opportunity areas, which is one of our priorities for new construction. We had a priority for providing acquiring buildings in high vulnerability areas. We had at least one solidly meet that criteria. There were about 3 others that were very close on the borderline. We counted of the 20 points of the scale of vulnerability, we counted 15 or higher as being meeting that criteria. We had a couple that were right around the 13, 14 mark. So, and not all of them are rehabs, but some are combinations. So we feel like we're making good progress on meeting that priority as well. Also, you know, all of the projects have identified serving communities of color. Two-thirds are will be serving families and family-sized units, and all of them have identified serving households experiencing homelessness, and that's going to result in homes for 184 single adults and 70 families. So we're really excited about meeting those priorities as well. You know, for services, all of them have submitted resident services plans and supportive housing plans that the review committees really evaluated for their demonstrated experience and their connections to supporting communities of color and other vulnerable populations. and their equity, overall equity plans as well. And you know, just to, the three of the projects will be considered majority, if not 100% PSH projects. So really moving forward on that goal on those fronts as well. And then in terms of the equity goals, I think, you know, all of the projects that have been awarded have demonstrated experience, or they have demonstrated a strong commitment to meeting our equity contracting goals, and utilizing low barrier screening, and using best practices for marketing and outreach to increase access to housing opportunities. So of course we'll be keeping track of the progress towards those measures, but we're optimistic and excited about those achievements as well. That wraps up my highlights, my highlight tour of our bond awards. I think next up we're going to hand it over to Jill to walk us through some cost monitoring that we are that we wanted to share with you of how these projects will continue to be monitored as they go through development.
In the last presentation with the Bond Oversight Committee, you had asked us about cost monitoring and how we were going to make sure that the projects that are being proposed would come in within the bond financing and the bond request. So we looked at it in terms of three stages: the pre-development stage or pre-award stage, the pre-development, and the construction phase. At each phase, the team within PHB looked at it and outlined some of the activities we take. It's in the cost memo, but I'll just quickly run through that. In the solicitation stage, a lot of work was done prior to putting out the solicitation about exactly what can PHB do for new construction as well as acquisition rehab in order to meet all of our targets and possibly be more. So we had looked at all the projects that we had recently financed, looking at the cost and seeing how we can achieve the 30% AMI units, the permanent supportive housing units, and the two bedroom and larger units. And using the previous models, understanding what are some major factors that are needed to be adjusted to make the numbers work. And that's how we sort of determined the 150 for new construction and the 100 for acquihab. In those, as we looked at the numbers, we also looked at what is a critical components that we as underwriters and funders need to understand. And these includes all the contingencies, all the cost line items, and being able to compare apples to apples, as well as what are some line items in the operating side. So we had looked at developer, well, on the construction side or the capital side, everything from cost per square foot to cost per unit, as well as the funding sources. We have the cost and the funding sources and making sure those lined up. And on the operating side, we also wanted to see what is the history of PHB's portfolio, what is some reasonable cost, and what would we want to see for things such as resident services, because those are, we have some high needs populations, and what are some operating reserves and total numbers that we want to see. So that was what helped solidify the solicitation and pre-award information. Also in the award letters, which are right now ready for signature, we have kept and stated very clearly that these awards are not to be exceeded, and that if there are any cost increases, they need to be sort of managed within the contingencies that has already been identified, as well as in the other cost, you can call it adjustments. We are also, as Molly said, 8 out of the 9 projects do not have any funding gaps. In the previous experience, when we looked at our history, a large part of why things caused delay was because there were funding gaps. And if somebody did not, or one of the proposers could not complete the funding, you just had weeks, months of delays. And that also not only changed your cost of construction, but also your whole project schedule. So that was what we did in the pre-award period. During pre-development, that is where the team decided was actually the greatest period of, you can call it, risk. The team includes senior construction coordinators who are trained architects, and they work with the team, the development team, to go through all of the due diligence materials. This would include the geotech, the environmentals, to really understand what kind of construction might be more suitable, because, and what are some sort of adjustments in the cost and the design. They also go through a multiple phases with the other bureaus. We have a pre-early assist, or you can also call it early assist. We also have the gator, so there's a number of other bureaus that are all lined up to make sure that the land use, the permitting, and the infrastructure portions line up with the development. And during that phase, the financing is also lined up so that our underwriters are looking to see if the analysis from the developers regarding the senior construction loan and the tax credits are lining up. So that all leads to the financial close, which we love. And during the, once it's financially closed though, actually the risk for cost escalation is what we consider more manageable and really minimal, because everything should already be lined up in the pre-development, because at that time, at financial close, the contract with the GC, the GMP, is signed, and if there's anything that goes sort of outside, PHP has a seat at the table. We are in every single negotiations where there's cost overrun or cost adjustment, and we have to approve those. And the senior construction coordinators works closely with the development team to make sure that if there are unforeseen circumstances, such as inclement weather, there are ways that we can help the team make it up elsewhere. So I hope you read that and give us any suggestions if you have any other thoughts.
Any questions? Annalise?
I guess just to clarify, if large unforeseen circumstances happened, there is a possibility for an adjustment in the funding level, correct? I just, construction, it's not my area of expertise, but what I hear is that things happen.
You know, so. I think that's something that we would be wanting to work with you and the development teams on. And I think it's part of our discussion about the funds that we have remaining. Mm-hmm. You know, my solid recommendation is that we do not spend all of those funds right now, that we actively move a significant number of the projects into the pipeline, so we know there are things that could be very unforeseen. I mean, the tax credit market could do, you know, the general economy could change in a variety of different ways, and I think it would depend largely on the type of circumstances we're seeing, and it will be an individual decision we'll make on each project. But we also do some, you know, there are methods of decreasing costs to the project as well. So I don't think it is a blank check, but obviously we want to move these projects forward as expeditiously as possible. But there are ways that we can ask the teams to do some redesign. There's also other options. So I think the answer is yes. It's very uncommon that anything that we would fund would look exactly like what it was planned when it's a conceptual phase. Dr. Holt, I think, is laughing largely due to some of the projects that I'm guessing he has experience with us on through the North and Northeast Oversight Committee's work. So, you know, our goal is frankly going to be not to have to increase funds. But I think we want to make sure that we have a pot of reserve funds able to meet any challenges that any of these projects may face.
Susan?
Of the nine projects, and you talk about pre-development, are some of them farther along already as they came forward? Were they farther along in their process?
A few of them are further along, but all of them are very, very early stages.
Okay.
We have to keep in mind that many of our development partners are not able to incur the cost of the full due diligence that's normally needed in a pre-development. So they're essentially wanting to make sure that they have public backing before they move forward. Mm-hmm. So sort of like a dance. Mm-hmm. A number of them have already come in and saying, hey, can we start the discussions? Because they'd like to be able to start moving the process forward as soon as they can.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. Excellent.
You know, our hope for, I think, for this committee as well is is that the projects will be coming to you. The project teams will start to, I think that's one of the discussions about how we are going to morph your work. And I think that we'll be asking the project teams over each one of your meetings to come in and give you actual updates on where they are. I mean, we'll provide that to you as well, but I think it's really valuable to hear from the project teams. And so starting at your next meeting, which will be in, is it January?
February.
Potentially.
we'll be starting to schedule the teams to come in so that you can get live updates from them as we go through.
Good segue to our next last slide here.
Oops, sorry.
What's next? Look at that.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I went ahead of my slide.
No, do you want to? Sure, I'll go first.
As Director Callahan has already mentioned, we've had discussion. We'll have a remainder of after all these commitments and combined with our previous expenditures, we have about $45 million left over. And we are conscious of the fact that we did not get a project in Southwest mm-hmm. corridor, so outer Southwest, and there is initiatives and lots of other land use infrastructure projects looking in Southwest, and we're looking to align our efforts as much as we can. But we're not sure how this will play out in the next 1 to 2 years, but we're hoping we can ensure that we have a project in Southwest corridor with some of the remaining funds. And as Director Callahan already mentioned too, we need to really keep tabs on how this next year is gonna go in terms of some of those unforeseen circumstances and the project timelines to be able to feel comfortable of releasing the remainder of those final dollars in, say, a second solicitation. But so we will continue to obviously monitor and come back with what we think the plan ought to be over time. Which leads us to how we're going to get from here to the next stage of our projects. And what we're hoping to do is really get a sense of how we did some changes in the way we did the solicitation this year. We wanted to be building upon the work with the Oversight Committee. We're much more prescriptive in what our goals were before we went into the solicitation. In the past, we've been more flexible, if you will. And we really want to get feedback from those who went through the process, those who were awarded, and those who also were not awarded, of how we could be thinking about doing things differently or things that we think we need to continue as best practice. And so we welcome that feedback, especially for those of you who participated in our community review committee of how we felt like we were being most responsive and areas that we just need to do a little bit better on the next go around. We have offered up our staff time to meet with those non-awardees around their projects and what advice we could provide them around ways that they could potentially be competitive, more competitive the next time we have a solicitation. A few of them are taking us up on that offer, and we additionally are providing written feedback to the development teams, and something that we've never done before. Just so we're as transparent as we possibly can. And it's feedback that we garner through both the Technical Feasibility Committee as well as the Community Review Committee to have a comprehensive set of these are the ways we think the project was the strengths and areas that we could say as, you know, either these are the areas we didn't quite meet the requirements or ways that that you could be thinking about a project a little bit differently next time. So it's
So that's a whole still body of work that the staff is going through. But what we're hearing from the development teams out there is that they're actually very excited and hungry for this feedback. And they want to know how they can do better next time, too.
Until they get the feedback.
We'll see how that goes. And as Dr. Callahan alluded, it does speak to, I think this is a marker for this committee. This is a chapter that we've really, I'm still a little bit stunned personally that we're able to achieve all the goals in one solicitation. It is not something that we had initially set out or anticipated, and when we saw how many fabulous projects came in, and we realized that the combination, and it was really a portfolio and looking at the combination of itself across the city and where the investments could build upon each other to meet all the aggregate goals. It really is a huge kudos to this oversight committee to get us to this place. And we do want to have a conversation with you around how do we then continue to have the oversight body be that role for continuing to keep us accountable and keep us tracking all the various project goals and getting some periodic updates from the different development teams and hearing some of the things that they're experiencing and how the projects are coming together. And then help us in several sometime next year around what our plan is for the remaining $25 million. I also wanted to mention we've had some conversations around how do we help our development partners achieve our our higher DMW ESB goals in contracting. As you may recall, Portland Housing Bureau set an aspirational goal of 30% of DMWSB in construction costs by 2021. And in anticipation that's a higher bar than we have had in the past, and it does push us to do a little bit better than we currently have done historically. And we recognize that you can set a goal, but you have to do the work with the development teams to actually achieve the goal, and potentially adding resources for technical assistance. We have had now some conversations with some of the development teams on how to best do that, and how do we right now we're prepared to show, to let you know what our current plan is of providing those TA dollars.
To give you an actual, sorry, Marla, let me expand a little bit on that. Mm-hmm. We did release an RFP with $300,000 to contract for a technical assistance grant to help our development partners. One of the oversight committee members sat on that review. However, when the submissions came in, the review panel did not feel that they had sufficient information based on the RFP and the submittals to score or evaluate those proposals, and wanted, frankly, to not score and move ahead with a different type of process. And that is not something that the technical formal procurement processes by the state allow. So we actually canceled that procurement due to the feedback that we received that it was too difficult to score those proposals. And so we are exploring ways to go back out so that we can have those funds actively paired with the bond projects. And the mayor has asked me to provide him a recommendation. And so Molly and the team and I are working on some potential recommendations to how to make sure that we can successfully marry those funds with the bond projects in a timely manner to make sure that we're able to move that technical assistance forward. So we did actually release an RFP, but the process wasn't successful. So we're going to re-evaluate options and plan to re-release those funds.
Yeah. So is the technical assistance then more targeted to the folks who have received the bond funding, as opposed to a more broad or am I not understanding?
So we were seeking an actual technical assistance provider.
Yeah.
And who could then partner with our developments.
With the ones, okay.
And actually, you know, it could assume a variety of different ways depending on the needs and the different projects that we're seeing. But, you know, sometimes it's as rudimentary as going down and breaking through, you know, all of the various ways that they're releasing their, working with their GCs so that they can break down certain portions of the work so that different contractors can apply for it. There's, you know, there's a variety of different things that occur depending on the way that they're planning on moving forward with their project. And so we want to make sure that we're able to bring the kind of technical assistance that each project may need, and it's going to look very different based on, you know, the particular project. So we're committed to that, and based on what the RFP and how we put it out, we don't think that we need to be more specific, and we need to look for a different way of approaching the work. So more to come on that before we'll know what path for sure we're on by the end of this year. But we want to make sure that we're really thoughtful and don't have another process that isn't as thoughtful as we, as this last one was. So we didn't anticipate that. And it's not uncommon, right? Sometimes you just need to go back and change your approach. So.
I'm
just gonna wait till the end.
Yes. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, okay. I guess so. This is kind of related to like bullet point number three, especially as you go into like the next agenda item of chairs, like the longer term things. I'm not really sure what value in decisions that we'll be bringing to the table as we move forward. I think prior to the selection of projects, it was really clear, like, you know, this area is where, you know, we need resources, this is a good project, this is a bad project. But now that all of these projects are selected, it's less clear to me, like, what decisions we would have influence on and what expertise or perspective we're bringing to that table. So I think, like, maybe, like, as we go forward, maybe that's not clear to anyone at this point. But I think it would be nice to have like a concrete idea of like what decisions or like what impact are we having as an oversight committee as we go through this transition. Because I think we don't have expertise in construction and finance. Just being clear on what we're helping with would be useful.
So I think first of all, there are funds remaining. So we are going to have to speak about how we want to approach those funds. We believe, as Molly indicated right now, that we want to take a little bit of time and be thoughtful with what we're going to do with those remaining funds. We believe we should be looking actively for a project in Southwest Portland. And we also believe strongly that we should make sure that the projects that we have right now are reaching, you know, actually come to fruition and have the available funds that they need. I think some of what you'll be doing is not just on the financial end, but making sure that, helping us make sure that the things that all these projects receive their awards for actually come to fruition outside of even the contracting, right, or the actual construction. So one of the things I think that's going to be really important is that the teams come to you not only and talk to you about where they are in terms of the development. If there are things that may require us to consider in additional funds, you'll be part of that process with us. We want you to know why that would be the case. We'll give you a recommendation, but it's very likely that someone could say, hey, I think I'm going to need more funding. And I think that's really where this group will come in. But I also think it's about making sure that how they're intending to lease up the buildings, how they're intending to provide supportive services, what their marketing plans are, how they're going to do the lease up. Are they reaching the communities that they said they were going to reach? I think there's a variety of different places that this committee will be involved in providing advice and guidance. So it's not, you know, the building is, you know, it's not just the construction, it's the operation, and the operation to ensure that all of the things that we told the community we were going to do in terms of priority access. I think really you all bring a variety of different expertise to the table, but I think that's really where I could see your guidance and advice coming in. And you know, we want to make sure that the people we said are going to be living in these buildings actually get the opportunity, right? So I mean, that's my quick answer to you.
Yeah, I guess what I need help with clarity on is, let's say things do go sideways and are not comporting with all of these goals that we have and the recommendations that we have, what recourse do we have from the bond perspective, and how can what recommendations can we provide? Because that's not clear to me at this point. Like, can you just withdraw all that? I mean, I don't know. Like, what happens?
Well, there will be a certain point where we are down a path. In terms of construction, but I do think that you know, between now and when we actually fund these projects, so we will do pre-development loans of some type with probably a significant number of these projects to make sure that they have the resources to move them forward. But we don't actually provide the funding until they're ready to break ground. And so we also have pretty extensive regulatory agreements with all of these on all of these buildings, and so there are mechanisms for us for certain levels of control. But I think it's also yes. I mean, there is a point where we are clearly not going to stop in the middle of a construction project and not proceed necessarily. But I think my sense is, and I'm basing this largely on some of the work that we have done with the North and Northeast Oversight Committee, is that the advice and guidance of that Oversight Committee has made for better projects. It's made for better projects in terms of, a lot of these aren't fully, their drawings aren't done. The architecture isn't done. So there'll be places where you may say, wow, I really think to a team that you're not thinking through your bedroom configuration. I don't know how that's really going to be for a family, or the space that you're providing in that building. You know, we really think you need to consider, a larger play area. I mean, there's a lot of things I think that you can weigh in, and I think the teams will be honest with you about where those, what's possible on a project. But I do think there's a place for you to have a lot of influence as these buildings actually come to fruition. And I would turn actually to your facilitator, who I would actually, because we have you at the table, I'd actually love it if you would talk maybe a little bit about how the Oversight Committee for North and Northeast has worked with these projects and where you think that the team may have influence.
Thank you very much. I would say that the fun now begins, that the work to this point has been the easy part, and the depth of the work is what's in front of you. As the projects begin to unroll and unfold, and helping to make sure that those who make their commitments, promises, intents follow through, I think that the opportunity for the Bond Oversight Committee is really to leverage and make sure that the objectives are being hit, that people are being thoughtful and intentional and very purposeful in their activity and how they market and how they lease up. I mean, this is where the real work happens now. Again, the first part was the easy part. Now this is the depth of it. And so, and I could go in depth around those specifics and particulars, but I think your role is key in making sure that the goals get accomplished.
The real fun begins.
The real fun begins.
Yeah, I think an example, just a current example for me, is we have a new building that's been built by Bridge Housing, the Vera, in South Waterfront. Thrilled about it. And just what I hear from the folks at Northwest Pilot Project about screening and how people are eligible and how Bridge has communicated and the outreach they've done is a vast improvement over an earlier project they did in the Pearl called the Abigail. Mm-hmm. So I was recently at a fundraiser with someone, I won't name him, has been a developer in the Pearl who now sits on the board of Bridge Housing. And I said, I just want to tell you that I hear great things and how respectful it is, and they're hitting the right profile. And he said, yeah, a lot better than the Abigail. So they had that knowledge as board members. And I think one thing that could happen as these teams come in, and some of us who have the experience can ask those pointed questions, mm-hmm. like, how are you going to do this? Mm-hmm. And so, again, to make it fair, the discussion at Northwest Pilot Project was not whether we're going to be there early in the morning or all night, but what time do we arrive? And there were two staff members with 40 completed applications at 4 in the morning, and there were three seniors ahead of them, to give you an idea of the need. But then, again, how it was processed, very fair and very complete information, and that was different from other experiences. So I think this idea of always improving our process, and again, making sure you hit what you're going after. And I think just by some directive questioning, maybe when we review some of these, we can make, if it's a group that hasn't thought, I mean, some of these people are pretty experienced, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like my common thought is in the same vein, in that maybe our bond oversight committee would benefit from a presentation of like what work has been done by other oversight committees, so that we're learning from the experience in North and Northeast or other places. Because I mean, I think that was, we went through the LISA process in the 82nd Division housing with Rose CDC. The same things occur, like there's so much to learn, and this is like, that is the in-depth of like who's actually being served, is where, yeah, there's a lot of hard questions that need to be asked. So maybe some time on our next agenda, or maybe it's two or three meetings from now, but getting clarity around what we can learn from previous processes as we transition into this new role in oversight might be really helpful.
We'd be happy to do that, and also I think give you a little bit more formal guidance on the areas that I think you'll be able to ask questions and the timing of those processes. So, you know, I think screening and marketing plans, who they're reaching out to, are going to be some of the key things that you'll be working on. I mean, it makes a difference as to who gets access. And so being able to ask those questions and have a dialogue. I mean, we do very experienced partners, but, you know, we can always improve, and there's always changes in the community that are happening. And so, you know, we've had a lot of control with the Ellington and 105 Burnside about the decisions we've made with this group about the screening criteria, how we were going to do marketing and outreach, and we need to make sure we're doing that same thing with all these projects. So for our next meeting, I think we'd be happy to share with you kind of an outline of where we think those issues could come up, and then of course talk to you. I think the North and Northeast Oversight Committee is probably the one that has would most mirror some of the work that we are expecting that you'll be doing, and I know it's been a multi-year process, so I'm sure that we could probably convince the North and Northeast Oversight Committee chair to maybe even come to one of the meetings and talk with you a little bit about the process.
You've got to go on his calendar. Great conversations. Memo and project cost monitoring. Anything around that? Good. All right.
We're ready for.
Are we ready for administrative items? Thanks. Wonderful. Well, we are today talking about a new chair and vice chair selections. And Jennifer, I'm going to ask you to come to the table, if you would. Come and join, please. She and I had just a brief conversation in regard to the chair and vice chair role, and I know there's been some preparation around it. And I just brought something up that I thought, I don't know why we didn't suggest it in the original development of the charter, and that was to create a process for continuity so that the chair and vice chair kind of had this continuance where once the term of the chair ended, then the vice chair would become the chair, and then you'd just be selecting a vice chair. And that kind of thing. Not necessarily something that you have to do, but something we hadn't talked about. So as members come in and out, just to have this sense of continuity of leadership. So Jennifer, I'll let you weigh in on thoughts.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Jennifer with the Housing Bureau. And this item, the selection of the new chair and vice chair, is a follow-up from some discussions in the committee a few months back. We amended our charter to extend out to a two-year term for both the chair and vice chair, and we this month we are at a place of the end of the two-year term since the appointment of the first chair and vice chair, which was Stephen Green as chair as well as Jess Larson as vice chair. Jess had stepped down in late last December due to her work at Metro, and then we're at a point today to have that discussion. We've sent out correspondence around the role of the chair and the vice chair, which is also in the charter, which is to work closely with the staff regarding the development of the agenda, and also to be able to support and facilitate conversations and discussions within the meeting. The vice chair is primarily support for when the chair is unable to serve in a particular meeting, and so I think that's that. And I believe there were some nominations, and maybe I'll just hand it over to the committee.
So I'd like to move that we nominate Todd to be the chair and Ellen to be the vice chair, and I've checked with them in advance, and they both agreed they're willing to serve. So I make that motion.
I'll second the motion.
we have a motion and second. That's on the floor.
One note, I did correspond with Alan prior to the meeting because he mentioned he's out of town. He was open to serving in either position and open for the committee to go with the committee's decision.
So we have a motion and a second on the floor before we go to vote around it. Seems like there's question or comment.
Oh, no, I just want to say, I think that might have been the fastest second we've ever had. Just not a, yeah, anyway. How much time is that?
I'm very excited.
All right, it has been motioned and seconded. All in favor, just say aye.
Aye.
All right, 100% carry. We have a new chair and vice chair. Is it a discussion that you wanted to have at all? Are you fine with how things sit as they are? It's obviously entirely up to you, just a thought, in terms of continuity. So,
I think the question I have is, if these terms are for 2 years, about how long do you think that this committee... A committee, I think you don't know.
17 years.
For life. So I think when, I think it's a great idea for continuity, and then I had this thought of, like, do we need it?
Absolutely, like, great question. Yeah. And so my response would be, how old are you at this point? So, about when you retire.
When I retire is when we're done here.
You probably don't want my thought on that. I think I volunteered for 4 meetings and it's been 5 years.
So. I do think this is, you know, we believe that we will have expended all of the bond funds within a 5 to 8 year time frame. I think once the last project is actually serving open and we have funded it is when the work would officially end. You know, obviously, I think it's going to be a pretty busy period for this committee in the next couple of years with the majority of these projects come online in 21 and 22. And I think the question is really, you know, what happens with the remaining funds and whatever else we choose to fund. So we hope that you will continue for this time period. Of course, there could also be people who have other things in their life that they would like to do. And so, you know, it doesn't, you are not necessarily committed for that time period. I would hate to lose anybody, but it does happen. So the committee can grow and change as needed.
Excellent. Any comments from our Bond Oversight Committee? Well, we want to extend appreciation to the staff of Portland Housing Bureau and Shannon and your work. Well done, guys.
Yeah.
Well done. Good work. Thank you very much. Proposed 2020 meeting dates. Do we have some proposed?
Yes, we do.
There they are.
I would like to clarify that I think it would be 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m.
Oh, yes.
All the p.m.s.
No.
Wait. When I read that in the packet, I thought that is is a lot.
That's a lot.
That's my bad. We have a lot to talk about. It's fine.
We will provide you meal.
A meal. You will get a meal. You will try that. If you pass out, we will revive you.
Yeah, and I've actually asked that we move the meeting back to 9:30. My regular scheduled mayor's meetings are this at the same time, my check-in with the mayor, so that's why I was late this morning. And so it's frankly a little bit for my convenience and being able to attend the meeting.
Fine with me. Better.
All right, thank you very much. Public testimony, did anyone sign up? Do we have any
questions? Could I have just one general question?
You can have as many questions as you would like because you are Susan.
I have a question about the next annual report to City Council and the timing on that. And the reason that I'm asking, it won't be till next year, right? Or...
I am, Jennifer, would you mind coming up and...
It was April of last year where we did our 2017 to 2018 annual report, so we would anticipate April.
I'm particularly interested in, and I'd be happy to be involved in finding some client stories at the Ellington, any of the properties that are inhabited, because I think that's so, I get a sense that's so strong. And I know there's always, it's a tricky area where you don't want to be exploitative to people who need privacy. But I think there is always somebody who will share. And if there was any need for someone like me to link up with an organization and find those stories, I think that would be powerful for City Council.
We would welcome that very much. So thank you, Susan, for the offer. That's actually an area that we would love to have your assistance.
Thank you.
Excellent. Any other comments? Looks like we've covered all things. Great meeting today. Good to see everyone. Thanks for coming and listening in. Again, appreciate your work. Have an excellent rest of the week. And through the holidays, since we won't see you until the new year, take care. Bye-bye.
And committee members, if you need parking validated, if you'll get me that parking ticket, I will.
I love the big board. It makes me so happy.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, would you like one?
I'd love one.
just like that.
Yep.
Let's do that for you. Because not just the one with the little napkins, but
the
right?
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be. I mean, where do you park the stuff?
Do you know?